Welcome to Sword and Shield, the official podcast of the 960th Cyberspace Wing. Join us for insight, knowledge, mentorship, and some fun as we discuss relevant topics in and around our wing. Please understand that the views expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of the U.S. Air Force nor the Air Force Reserve, and no endorsement of any particular person or business is ever intended.
Good day, gladiators. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Sword and Shield podcast. It's Frances Martinez, Director of Psychological Health for the 960 Cyberspace Wing. We do have a couple guests, but before we introduce them, I just want to give a disclaimer. So we will be talking about some adult content, mental health related, alcohol use. And so this podcast is not for young listeners. All right. So I have two guests with me today. One is on the line and another person is here with me in person. So we'll start with Major Perez.
Hey, Gladiators. Major Juan Perez, 960th OSF Director of Operations.
And then over to Senior Lester.
Good morning. Senior Master and Lester, currently at the headquarters, Air Force Reserve Command, in the A3, but I was in the wing prior, and I'm actually transitioning back into the wing here in the next couple months.
Awesome. So I thank both of you for joining in today. We are going to have some good conversation, but first I want to say happy anniversary to Major Perez, and yep. You can talk a little bit about what I'm referring to.
Yeah. Thanks, Frances. So, today marks the one-year anniversary of my sobriety date, which is a big deal for folks that have gone through the journey similar to mine. And so I approached Frances with this idea of sharing on this podcast, and with the hopes of if it can help at least one person, you know, maybe raise their hand and want to get help, then it's worth it. And I invited Senior Lester on here to chat with us because coincidentally, a year ago also, not quite exactly a year, but coming up on a year for him, he decided to start his own journey. And so, yeah, we've been going, you know, kind of going through this together. And Colonel Erridge recommended that we maybe do a combined podcast. I felt a lot better doing it with a friend of mine and having a conversation versus just by myself.
I'm not that scary.
No, but it's, you know, still get a little nervous. So, and like you know, I don't like talking. So definitely stepping outside of my comfort zone. But if it's going to help someone, it's worth it.
Yeah. So let's start off with a year ago today. What did that look like for you? What sparked the motivation to start that sober journey?
Yeah, I'd say I was at my rock bottom, which is different for everyone. For some people, it's, you know, they've gotten to a car wreck and they're in jail. But for me, I got to a point where alcohol was holding me back from achieving my full potential. And I was starting to see it more and more. And when I say full potential, I mean as like as an officer, as a father, as a husband and a friend. So I decided I want to do something about it. And I first approached my leadership and told them I was going through, and they're very surprised. when I told my wife even before that I was struggling with in silence, she was surprised, didn't realize I had a problem, wouldn't say I had a problem either. So I got all these close friends of mine and family and supervisors and leadership telling me, oh, you don't have a problem, but it looks different for everyone.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about like they didn't even know, right? And so we're really good at hiding things.
Yeah.
And I always talk about wearing different masks, right? You're JP at home. You are, you know, Major Perez here. Mm-hmm. So when you're wearing different masks in front of different people, you are, you know, who you are in front of those individuals. And so for your family not even to recognize like your alcohol usage or that you were needing help, what could have been different that they could have saw some signs to know that you're not doing well?
I think the signs were there. They always have been. It's just, I think it was a matter of, you know, like for people close to me not wanting me to get in trouble. But I think you and John Covington have done a really good job of really advertising like, hey, you can get help for mental health stuff and whatnot, and it's not gonna affect your clearance in your job. I finally felt comfortable enough to where I didn't feel like that was a real risk of losing that clearance or affecting my job. I think culturally we've been shifting to a point where we're encouraging right, people getting help. And so I felt comfortable enough to finally do something about it.
So since you brought up the clearance piece, right? What did that look like for you? Talk to me about a little bit about the fears that held you back from getting help earlier. And then what effects, if any, did it have on your clearance?
No effects on the clearance whatsoever. Yeah, I went to our security manager, Mr. Covington, and told him everything going on. And he basically said, you know, unless I'd gotten in trouble like a DUI or something, that's reportable.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting help for mental health, it's more like, you know, like courtesy, like, yeah, he knows about it, but it's nothing that's on my record. Mm-hmm.
And so the listeners are aware of what level of treatment that you went to, right? So there are different levels of treatment. There's, you know, outpatient mental health where you kind of go and see a therapist or psychiatrist monthly, biweekly, things like that. Or there's, you know, higher levels of care. There's inpatient hospitalization, there's a partial hospitalization, and then there's like a rehab facility that we generally would send our members to if they're needing those levels of treatment. So you want to talk a little bit about that. So they are aware of what level of treatment you were in, and it still didn't affect your clearance.
Yeah. So when I went to the ADAP clinic, and they, you know, they do their assessment, which is similar to the annual PHA questionnaire we do. This time I was honest, and which I guess, you know, being scared earlier, you know, throughout my career of like being honest with those questionnaires, if you have to lie on something like a questionnaire like that, that's probably something you should probably consider questioning, you know, if you need help or if you need to do something about it. Anyway, so yeah, the results from that questionnaire where I have an extreme alcohol use disorder, and I needed to be enrolled in residence treatment like ASAP. They did some labs and tested some blood labs, and my liver was showing some out of range markers, right, for some damage and whatnot. So yeah, so in residence treatment for 6 weeks at Warrior's Heart here in Bandera, Texas, out in the beautiful Hill Country, and actually just down the road from where I live. Maybe I don't know if you want me to talk about that experience yet.
Yeah, whatever that looked like for you.
Yes, so leadership here was very supportive of me, you know, stepping away for 6 months to focus on myself and take care of myself, which made it a lot easier to do. No one was guilt tripping me or telling me or trying to convince me not to go. Everyone was real supportive, which made it a lot better.
And I think for you, because I remember an email that you sent out to all the leadership saying where you're at, that you're taking a knee and you're getting help and you're going to be out of pocket, right? That took a lot of courage to put yourself out there to share with everyone like what you're doing and why you're doing it. But I think it also had a little bit of that accountability piece to it too, right?
It did.
So everyone wants to suffer in silence, and you actually put it all the way out there.
Yeah, that was, I was crying during that email when I was typing that up. That was a tough one. That was like my rock bottom there. And that was coming off of a night of very heavy drinking and just being in a real bad place. But it served the purpose that I wanted to. I got a lot of replies back from that and from a lot of folks that were encouraged, you know, like happy for me and that I was getting the help and offering their support, right? You know, if I ever needed it down the road type of stuff. And I think it's going to take people like that kind of being transparent for us to change this culture where, you know, like it is okay to get help. I think it's going to take more of those type of things.
And conversations like this, right? That people have been through it and they're able to share their stories and the other side of it and how they're doing. And I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So Dave, you want to go ahead and start with your story? I know you're almost at that 1 year mark, and tell me a little bit about your journey and what that looked like to you to get help.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So yeah, I'm about 3 weeks away from my 1 year, which is Major Prez and I actually had, we were both at a conference and just talking, and I think we were right around 6 months at that time. And just like you said, kind of happened to be going through this at the same time. And so we were able to connect and kind of go through each other's stories. And then as he wanted to do this, thought to include me, which I definitely appreciate, sir. So yeah, a lot of similarities. I didn't have any major inciting incident like a DUI or anything like that, but I definitely was hit my rock bottom as well. And really what that looked like for me was I kind of set up these rules for myself to convince myself that I still had some control over it. And, you know, those things like, as long as I'm showing up to work on time, spending time with my family, paying my bills, then obviously I've got everything under control. And really that was just kind of a way of convincing myself something that now in hindsight I was losing control and it was getting worse. So same thing, a lot of support around me, my wife and, you know, work. I got nothing but support from them and you know, come out all the way to the command chain. Same thing, TS clearance that I, the only thing I had to do was about 3 months into the program, I had to submit an MFR from the ADAP team saying that I was following the rules and sticking to the program and never affected my clearance. In fact, I actually got hired into my new position as the SEL at the 42nd COS while I was finishing treatment. So the only reason I highlight that is, you know, you still are able to move through life as you're going through this process. So I didn't do the in-residence treatment. I did the basically 4 months of going once a week to the ADAP clinic and more of a group therapy kind of thing. And then 3 months of going once a month to meeting with the counselor and then finishing out and making sure that I was set up for success. And when it started, you know, they had the commander in the shirt come in and meet with the team and kind of set up a plan. No, actually, let me back up real quick. So one, as far as getting into the program, I had gotten into this cycle where every morning I would wake up hungover or recovering, just, you know, drinking myself to sleep every night, and then get up and on my way to work, tell myself, you know, I'm not going to do that tonight. I'll do something different and change things up. And then on the way home or, you know, after I got home, I would tell myself like, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll just have like two drinks, you know, it'll be fine. I can keep control of it that way. And then of course, two turn into somewhere, you know, six, seven, however many. And, you know, so this was a cycle. And then at night, really kind of getting really down on myself and almost depressed of just like, okay, well, why did I do this again? And, you know, kind of going through that cycle daily to the point where supervisor noticed that I was coming in and it kind of took the form of more anxiety rather than anything else. She said I just seemed more on edge and could tell I was just kind of heightened. But she suggested that I go and, you know, talk to mental health just to kind of see if I needed to just talk to someone and kind of get through this anxiety. Was really, like I said, how it was coming off. And you know, everybody knew that I drank, but not how they didn't know how much. And so as I went through, I went to ADAPT and kind of like Major Perez was saying, for the first time in my career, I was honest with how much I had drank. And they told me that they couldn't force me to go to ADAPT, but she volunteered to, the counselor volunteered. She said she would hold my hand and walk me down there if she had to. She was really concerned with how much I was drinking. And that kind of more forceful hand was, it turned out exactly what I needed at the time. And, you know, looking back, it was weird as I went through the program. When I first talking to that counselor and going that same day to go do the ADAP evaluation, I was not happy with them. They were not my friends in that moment. But, you know, again, it turned out to be exactly what I needed. So I went there, got into the program, and going back to the commander first shirt, you know, one thing that I realized, I felt a lot of shame initially, you know, mostly because of the, not only ADAPT, but the, you know, the stigma of being an alcoholic. I have history in my family. And so, you know, I knew kind of what people talked about and how people looked at it and all that. And so I kind of really got down on my myself there, you know, okay, well, now I'm this person. So, but talking to the first sergeant and the commander, you know, the big point that I realized with them is they would 1000% rather get the call that someone had raised their hand and said, hey, I need help, rather than a DUI or, you know, alcohol poisoning or whatever that rock bottom looks like for someone that has a major incident that led to now this is something you have to do. It's no longer self-referred. You're command directed to do it. So yeah, they
that's a piece I wanted to touch on is, you know, voluntary, when we're talking about like security clearances and things like that, right? When you show that you're voluntarily taking charge and having that self-awareness, you're more reliable, right? Versus someone who's command directed for treatment. And so these are things that are within everyone's control, right? Someone just has to ask for the help.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the hardest part, was raising my hand. Because similarly, you know, I'd always heard like, oh, you can do these things and they won't ruin your career. But I didn't know anybody that had personally gone through it. And that was one of the main reasons I wanted to come on today, was to say, you know, speak from firsthand experience. And again, if it helps anybody along their journey, it's worth telling my story and kind of getting over those nerves and getting out there and doing it. I was not as transparent at first as Major Perez was. It was really my branch chief, who was my supervisor, and my division chief were really the only ones that knew at first, as well as Commander First Shirt. But as far as the ones I worked with in the office, and again, they were very supportive and said, you know, whatever they needed. If I needed to go do the 6-week program, then, you know, that's what we do. They said, don't hesitate to do anything. Take care of yourself and your family first. But I was, you know, for the first few months, it was just, you know, oh, I have a medical appointment once a week. And, you know, I didn't really talk about it until I had kind of become more comfortable with myself and what I was going through, and realizing that it wasn't because I was a bad person or a failure or any of these other things that floated around inside my head. You know, the first day getting back from that treatment, I went and I was talking to my branch chief, and it was just her and I, and we... I did break down, you know, just like, I swear I'm not a bad person. And obviously she didn't feel that way. It was just kind of me working through my own viewpoint on it. But so I ended up going through the program, didn't have any issues as far as, like I said, support or anything. My wife was concerned, but she also knew, and we've talked about it many, many times. She wasn't going to force me into it or make me do anything until I was ready. And that's kind of the biggest piece for me. And I think for most people is, you know, you can't do it for somebody else. You have to do it because you are ready to do it and you are ready to make the change. You know, I a lot of things, talking about perspective, I thought I was doing, spending quality time with my family and doing well at work, when I realized looking back, like, you know, the most of the morning I was kind of recovering. So I wasn't really useful until around lunchtime. But even spending time with my family, whether it was, you know, hey, let's go out back and, you know, kick a soccer ball with the kids or whatever, but oh, I got to grab my drink, or, you know, even sitting down and spending time with my wife, you know, our relationship has gotten so much better over the last year, because I am actually more present and able to be in the moment rather than having this thing that I have to do, kind of, that was first and foremost and taken over, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so I want to ask both you and Major Perez, looking back, what did alcohol use cost you?
Yeah, I'll start. And Dave was touching on it there. So for me, it was costing me more genuine, authentic relationships. And I guess this is kind of goes into like my new mindset. So I've taken on a growth mindset, and I really focus on my values, which are relationships for me. So relationships with my higher power, relationships with myself, and then relationships with my family, right, and friends. So now that I'm sober and I'm on this growth mindset journey, and like I'm working to improve every day, like part of that focus is how can I improve those relationships with my spouse and my kids. And like it's like Dave talked about, being present, and you, like, I didn't really know what that meant until I got back from Warrior's Heart, and it was over the holidays, and I was with my kids in the yard playing, and I wasn't worried about where I was going to get my next drink, and if I was, remember, my drink was running out or any of that, and I was just enjoying the moment with them. Mm-hmm. And all that was such a good feeling. I hadn't had that in a long time, if ever.
How about you, Dave?
Very similarly, I don't need to waste time repeating everything that Major Perez just said. Really, it was like you said, being present and relationships. I will say one thing, and I don't know if you went through this, sir, but it definitely the first couple of months, it was not easy. Like I said, between, you know, feeling like the ADAP team at first, not adversarial, but it was just kind of, I knew they were there to help, but I just wasn't quite ready to accept it yet. As well as, I remember actually specifically, we went back to San Antonio for Christmas. So I've been, you know, about a month and a half, with a little over a month, not drinking. And we drove by where I used to go to drink and to pick up my liquor. And it was the parking lot was full. And I immediately got mad. I felt like, you know, oh, everyone else in the world can drink, but not me. I'm no, you know, which obviously is not true. Truth be told, most of the people in the store could probably use some help as well. But either way, it was, I kind of made it about me and trying to, you know, so you talk about what you lost. I definitely lost perspective on, you know, what mattered, you know, and like he was saying, where am I getting my next drink and all that? It wasn't, you know, I got to the point where we couldn't even take the dog for a walk or go for a bike ride without, oh, hold on, I got to make a drink real quick. And then we'll go, like, you know, just really lost sight of priorities and what was really important. And then the last thing, honestly, was literally cost. I think at one my highest out between rum and sodas, I was probably spending close to $300 a month. That, you know, just throwing it away on that habit. So that was another big thing for me, was, you know, not throwing that money away every month as well.
Yeah. So I'll add on to that, like post-Warrior's Heart, right? Like what was difficult. So I came back this new person, and those who were close to me, right? Like my wife and family, friends, they kind of felt like they didn't know who I really was. Because was I putting on a facade for all those years, and not now this is the real me? And so it was a tough transition for folks to adjust to, the new me, right? My new mindset and perspective on things. That along with how to, like, coping with stress, like sober. Like before, it was easy. I just, you know, I would just drink a six pack of a beer, or some bourbon, and then that, you know, then I don't have to worry about that stress, that self-medicating that stress with that way. So coping now, different mechanisms, right? So for me, it's routines, my morning routines, working on like my prayer, my meditation, and my positive podcast where I'm learning something, and then, you know, working out during the day, breaking up my day with the lunch gym break, and finding healthier ways, you know, talking about, like, guys like me don't like talking about their feelings and emotions. So to talk through what you're feeling, and, you know, just finding those different ways to cope. I'm feeling a lot better a year later now than when I first started, for sure.
I think people don't really realize that alcohol and drugs is a coping mechanism, right? It's how a lot of people mask their pain or deal with their pain, but the problems are still there. And so a lot of the times people that go to drugs or alcohol, there's underlying mental health stuff going on, right? Whether it's depression, anxiety, PTSD, you know, working with providers can help to resolve some of those past traumas or mental health diagnoses, is in addition to focusing on the sobriety piece.
Yeah. So what I'd say about that is, if you think you have a problem, ask yourself why you're drinking. Is it to cope with that mental health stuff? Is it to self-medicate a depression, like I was doing? And I think if you start there, I think that'll reveal a lot about, you know, where you are and maybe what you need to do. I think you need, so personally, I don't think alcohol provides any value. I don't see a value in drinking it at all. For those that do, I'd at least ask that you're in a mentally healthy state, where you're not using it to cope.
Yeah. So as we're wrapping up, I want to ask you guys, what keeps you sober? And then what advice can you give our listeners today? So whoever would like to start, Dave?
Yeah, I can start with this one. Actually, kind of circling back to the beginning with what Major Perez was saying, accountability. You know, and that was one thing that I noticed. You know, like I said, I didn't talk about it a lot in the beginning, as kind of a need to know basis. And over the last 6 months or so, definitely over time, I opened up more about it, and, you know, I talked to people. One, to you know, kind of get my story out there, but also a big part of it was that accountability. So much, you know, I was at a work social dinner a while back, and I just happened to talk to someone at the table that morning about my, you know, not drinking in my journey. And so, you know, of course, work social, people are having drinks. And I wouldn't have drank, but knowing that someone was sitting at the table that would, you know, call me out on it if I had decided to fit in or you know, do the social thing, definitely it made it even more not an option. And kind of along those lines, knowing your triggers is a big thing they talk about when you're going through the program. And so for me, the social drinking was never really a trigger. Mine was more boredom or those, you know, coping with, you know, hard day or depression, anxiety, PTSD, or a combination of the three. So knowing that, you know, it was more the idea of drinking or, you know, the habit of it, you know, because it started as just coping and then it became just something that I did. And so knowing your triggers, knowing yourself and, you know, having people around you that are supportive, but would also be able to tell you or like I said, kind of almost call you out on it of like, you know, hey, you've worked hard to get here. Don't, you know, keep it up, you know, again, staying positive, but yeah, the accountability was a big piece for me.
Yeah. So for me, just, you know, like loving life, you know, being happier, being, you know, being content, the better, more genuine relationships, those are all things that motivate me to stay sober. So I basically, because, you know, alcohol is everywhere, like the marketing mm-hmm. for it, you see it everywhere, like Dave was saying, social events, and you'd be surprised when you're not drinking it or how often it's thrown in your face. So for me, what's been effective is I've changed what I associate that trigger with. Before, it used to be that euphoric feeling, right? Like that warmth just taking over my body and just easing my pain or whatever I was going through or stress. And I associate it now with the negative things, like the up all night puking and blacked out drunk and then waking up with that shame and guilt and just the hangovers. And so, you know, is it worth that? And the like the longer I go into my journey and the more I'm growing, it's an easy no, not worth it.
So I think that, you know, we touched on the leadership support piece of it. And, you know, what we've done as a culture here in the wing is like no alcohol at wing functions, right? Like holiday parties or our fall festival and things like that, because we're trying to create a help-seeking culture versus let's mask our stuff culture. And so that's what we're trying to really create. And then I asked leadership to really look at that in your own organizations. Like, what can you do to help create an environment for help-seeking behaviors? So I thank you guys for joining and sharing your stories. I know it's really hard to share these things and be vulnerable, especially with it's just out there, right? You don't know who's going to be listening. So I'm grateful for both of you joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you.
All right. So to our listeners, if you or someone you know are contemplating suicide, please dial 988. That is the National Suicide Lifeline. Also know that leadership support is there. Reaching out to friends, your first sergeant, your commanders, me, if you're, you know, within the wing, JP or Major Perez, and also him. So reaching out to your coworkers, right? Because those are the people that you see every day. Ask for help and know that help will be there for you. There's also Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're interested in seeking some of their services out, you can go to aa.org. And they also have some virtual meeting options and things like that. So we encourage you to reach out to someone rather than no one. All right, Gladiators, thanks for listening to this episode. And Gladiators out.